This week on Pop of Culture, we're on the move. We talk to the creatives in charge of an upcoming dance show called Groove.
And so it's not about where you're coming from per se, or your race or your gender. It's about trying to create something new from the norm.
And we'll talk to a CEO who brings burgeoning Broadway shows to Indianapolis.
So if the show isn't getting a warm reception in Indianapolis, something's wrong there.
And we'll sew a very special pillow. Coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer, and I'm dancing on my own today, but we still have a very full show. We're going to start with a topic that might be a little hard to talk about on the radio, dance. And I am really excited to be in the room today with two choreographers, dance artists, and co-artistic directors of an upcoming performance at Emmons Auditorium called Groove, Interlocking Cultures Through Movement. And I'm so excited to be here with Jen Meckley and Emmanuel Cujo. Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves? We'll start with you, Jen.
My name is Jen Meckley. My pronouns are she, they. I'm currently an assistant professor of dance at Ball State University. I teach mainly hip-hop, modern, dance history. But my role in Groove is the artistic director of the production.
And what does that mean?
My role in this has been to help organize what the full picture looks like. So how we're taking West African dance forms and translating them then into hip-hop dance forms. We commissioned a few other guest artists to be a part of the choreography for this show. So my role was largely to coordinate a lot of them attending and working with our students.
Awesome. And we're also here with Emmanuel Cujo.
Yes.
Hello, Emmanuel.
My name is Dr. Emmanuel Cujo. Can call me Cujo. I'm also an assistant professor at dance department. I teach dance history courses and also West African dance forms. Groove. Yep. I'm the main choreographer for the show. And I'm also associate or artistic director of the group production. And yep, it's amazing working with students for this production.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where did the idea come from? Cujo, we'll start with you.
Yep. The idea came from Professor Jen Macklin. So I was there and she walked to my room, my office, said, Cujo, hey, we got to figure this out. Groove. I said, whoa, groove. That sounds good. Can we add something catchy? Interlocking cultures through movement.
Yeah.
So we both brought idea, but Professor Meckler was the main brain behind the name. And
awesome.
I supported her, yep.
Okay, so Jen, tell us then about how this came about in your mind.
Yeah, we've been in the dance curriculum, we've been working a lot to make West African and hip hop dance forms a larger part of the dance curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really want to show audiences that there's more to dance than just ballet or modern or, you know, European dance forms that maybe they're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really was about highlighting the journeys of the communities and the people,
right,
that originated the cultures in West Africa,
mm-hmm,
especially Ghana, where Cujo is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But then also highlighting how the West African dance forms also link to the journeys of hip hop,
mm-hmm,
dance and culture, and the people also who originated those forms. Because there's a lot of connections between the two, and so it's really about that community and where these forms are really rooted and coming from.
Awesome. And Cujo, can you talk a little bit more about that, about the notion of the community and the dance forms as they come to us from Africa?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm really working on retentions, dance forms that have been sent from Africa to the Caribbean, into America. So I thought that hip hop was very grounded in West African dance forms. You see the flipping, all those gestures. Yeah. You could see their reflection in African dance forms. And so when I say community, it's about we trying to tell our own stories that can be shared from different perspectives. So when I say community, it's about where we intersect together, where movement brings us together, and how we can really build a new art forms. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about where you're coming from per se, or your race or your gender. It's about trying to create something new from the norm. Yeah. And so that's what we mean by community.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And I think the styles themselves are communal as well, right? Mm-hmm. And I've seen, Jen, I've seen you teach, and you do. You have students in circles. And, and you know, as we envision, you know, this work, this dance, these forms sort of taking place in really, you know, neighborhoods and places where we just find ourselves together, right? Can you both kind of speak to that from your perspectives?
Okay. Yeah, there's definitely a natural, I think, sense of community that's already built into hip hop, especially just from the energy and the encouragement that is a part of the movement, right? And so I think in the choreography, in Groove in particular, what I've noticed in the process, the rehearsal process, is that there's sort of this natural want to encourage peers, right? So as they're dancing, as they're moving, to give them that extra energy. Yeah, so I think it's just naturally kind of built into that. And I think there's also within that, as audiences are watching, I think there's also this hope that there is that instinct to contribute to that energy. Whereas like for a lot of forms like ballet or modern, like an audience wants to stay silent, right? And there's kind of this different way of watching and observing dance that I think we're also interested in trying to break the barriers of that as well.
Wow, that's great. You want to talk about community?
Yeah.
That is Africa. Yeah. We believe that it takes a village to raise a child. And so in our dance forms, in our cycles, in our songs, call and response, we are building community. And so nobody owns the dances in Africa. It's owned by the community.
Right.
So I'm not the choreographer for these dance forms. I came to meet it, I'll die and leave it. Yeah. And so that mindset, let me understand that it's a community. Compared to, I'm the choreographer of these dance forms, I own this, I created that. We don't have that in our culture. We own the dance and we'll leave it behind. Looking about how we dance in circles, how we relate our songs, somebody calls, somebody responds. So I try to bring that same idea into Groove. Oh, could you, I was not the one there, I was here. I said, no, it's a community.
Right, yeah.
When a person's not there, step in and make it happen. And what little, what does Kudo mean? I mean, we are all playing all the roles at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm lifting this person. If the person's not there, I cannot do it. Step in and do it.
Right.
It's a community, it's a family. And so that idea was very important. I had to send that signal to them that we all have to be hands on deck and help each other because it's a community. And so it's a very important that we are doing that. And no matter hip hop or West African, this is very central in our dance forms. When they are dancing, cheering them, yo, go! These are all kind of community, trying to empower someone to keep dancing. And when I'm an audience, I can come anytime to show appreciation to the dancers and the musicians as compared to the Western theater stage, audience and the stage.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of differentiation. But in West African dance forms, hip hop, we blend in. I can be the dancer one time, I can be the drummer one time, I can be the audience one time. We always shift and making it happen. Yeah.
This is one time when I'm actually sad that we're on the radio and nobody can see sort of what Cujo is doing here in front of the mic. It's amazing. Cujo, how do the students respond to this? I know because these are students mostly from the Midwest here in the U.S. and very, they've been taught right from wrong and you don't, step on other people and all of that. How do they respond?
Yes, I knew this might be a challenge. So in my classes, I started doing that. So where's your cousin? Cousin? Where's your sister? My sister? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, your next classmate is your cousin. It's your brother, your sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I started that in my normal classes to ingrain that in your mind that we are all community, one people. I'm your dad. I always do that in class.
Uh-huh.
For the beginning, they didn't get it.
Yeah.
Those were new to me as a professor.
Sure.
But over time, we didn't warm up. Who's not here? T, let's wait for T. T comes in, we start warming up.
Mm-hmm.
So that, okay, without anybody, we can't do anything. So they watch out for everybody. Mm-hmm. We are going in two, in four, in five, and that is it. And so that was really kind of a way that I began to throw that thing in there, and it's working now. When they see me on the street, hey, Kojo, our dad. Hey. I saw my cousin some minutes ago, and that was a drive. And for me, that means a lot.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. We're forming families all the time.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What do you hope audiences take away from the performance when they come and enjoy it?
Oh, man. Definitely joy. I feel like, these forms come from a place of oppression, but there is still like this very clear sense of joy that I think our students have been able to kind of bring out of these styles and these forms, but also just a new appreciation for these forms, right? And understanding, because I think Kujo kind of brings this different approach to West African forms that maybe people haven't really thought about yet. I think a lot of people think of West African forms as like always high energy.
Right.
And so there's this very clear subtlety that I think is a part of groove. And so finding a different appreciation for this style in particular, and just like the variety of hip hop that is out there, right? I think we like to put everything in a box a lot of times, and hip hop isn't just one thing, right? West Africa in general is a really big region, right? Mm-hmm. And so just understanding that there is more to these forms than just what we may know and understand. So I think for me, that's kind of the biggest takeaway that I want audiences to have.
And Kujo, how about you?
Yes. Just to know that our dance forms, they tell their stories.
Mm.
And so groove is gearing towards trying to tell the untold stories of our dancing bodies, whether medicalized, racialized, able, disabled, all the bodies are welcome in the space to experience how we tell our stories. Because we don't really pay attention to the body being the script.
Mm-hmm.
How we ascribe and inscribe on our body is very important. And for me, it's about resilience, reclamation, the pain, the anxiety, the geographical encounter that we have been through as people of color, and how we have stayed strong and strong and strong to really retell our stories. Mm-hmm. There were many attempts to alienate and to discredit and to bury our culture and our heritage. As a groove, go back to dig out what were buried, things that were not told, and bring them back to life and tell them as it is. So there will be a moment where you feel like crying, feel like hugging somebody, you feel like laughing. And Africa is very huge. It's 54 countries in one continent.
Mm-hmm.
And at times we try to limit or label it as very small continent. And so the idea is to expand and tell our own stories from our own perspective that have not been spoken before. So I will challenge someone to get prepared for some of the words that will come in, our stories, our movement, the music. It's very thought-provoking. So come and invite a friend, invite a friend, invite a friend.
And bring a community.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I cannot thank the both of you enough for coming in and chatting with us today. This is Groove, Interlocking Cultures Through Movement. It's March 21st and 22nd at Emmons Auditorium, 7:30 p.m. Kujo and Jen, I feel so joyful now, and I can't wait to see the show. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back to Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer, and today we are continuing our semi-regular series of conversations between the coasts with a conversation with Joel Kirk. Joel is the CEO and founder of Discovering Broadway, which is an organization that is housed in Indianapolis, and we'll tell you a little bit about it. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here. Okay, so give us the rundown. What is Discovering Broadway?
Yeah, so Discovering Broadway is a pre-Broadway incubator program. We help creative teams that have a show that's Broadway bound by flying them out of New York, housing them in Indianapolis, giving them a per diem, giving them time and space to argue about make-believe and prepare their show for its either world premiere or really sometimes a show will open cold on Broadway. And after what can be a week of this writer's retreat or 2 weeks of a writer's retreat, we bring out their ideal cast from New York, LA, Chicago, and they will work with actors that are local in Indianapolis. They'll work with professional musicians that are local in Indianapolis and will put on a private concert that's really exclusively for Hoosier audiences, where they get to hear songs that were written during that retreat. And it's the premier audience. So they're really premiering this score with their favorite Broadway actors. And it mirrors sharing the music and a kind of South by Southwest panel discussion that is artist-led about how do you adapt a musical? How did these songs come to be? And I typically MC those conversations so that it offers Hoosiers a peek behind the creative process. And while those actors are in town, there's a lot of downtime when you're perfect at sight reading. And, you know, an author and a writer, a composer, they need time to revise their work based on what they're hearing. So we kind of came up with this idea of masterclasses, that we do 4 minimum masterclasses a year, where those actors that are just kind of sitting around, we bring them into schools, we program classes, we've done dance classes for people who are passionate about learning about dance of all ages. And we've been going now for about 5 years. We were launched right before the pandemic happened, which I don't recommend launching a charity that has a mission statement that's never existed before in the throes of a pandemic. But yeah, we just concluded last year and our sixth show, and just kind of wrap up the answer to your question. Our inaugural show was a musical adaptation of the 2006 film, The Devil Wears Prada, and Sir Elton John and the incredible 2-time Tony winning writer, Shana Taub, adapted it into a musical. They came out in 2021 to Indianapolis, did a writer's retreat, did concerts. And it just opened on the West End in London December.
Yes, it did. Yeah. So excellent.
We're thrilled to kind of see a full circle experience with that first show. So yeah, incubator, writer's retreat, and masterclass program. That's Discovering Broadway in a nutshell.
So that's awesome. And can you give us a rundown of some of the other shows? I know Devil Wears Prada, that's on the West End. And what else have you done?
Yeah, our second show, which we did about 45 days after The Devil Wears Prada, because this was all in 2021. So when we did Prada, only the first vaccine shot was available. And I think you had to be 75 or older to get it. So by the time April came around, everybody had the opportunity to be fully vaccinated. And it was kind of that weird season where we're like, the pandemic's over, right before the Delta wave variant.
Exactly.
Came in.
It's like the pandemic's over, but is it? It's not.
Such a strange year of programming. So we were like, oh, given this feeling of excitement and joy in springtime, why don't we do a really upbeat show that's like a love letter to musical theater? And Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich, these incredible writers, wrote the show Ever After, based on one of my mom's favorite movies, Ever After, a Drew Barrymore film from 1958. A spin on Cinderella, but it goes into more depth about her backstory and her relationship with her father. And then a couple months later, we did a musical adaptation of Hamlet that is very much in the weeds right now as we speak. It's different in that it's a completely sung through adaptation of Hamlet, where a different Broadway writing team is writing each character. So a young pop star
really
is writing. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So it's a team of 13, eight different writing teams. What we did for that retreat was we really called it a orchestration lab, because it was the way that the whole team learned whether or not there was something there, like that it wasn't just going to be a cluster of a mixtape that didn't have cohesion and couldn't tell a musical theater story. And the opposite happened. Everybody arrived. Most of the team didn't know each other. They all fell in love. They all became each other's biggest fans. And the concert to the paying public proved that actually there was something tonally cohesive about all the voices. The next year we did a show that didn't have anything but a single song written for it. It was a song I found on YouTube. It was the most devastating, beautiful I Want song I've ever heard. It's called Sick. You can Google it. It's about a young woman that the hook of the song is, I'm sick of being sick to you. And it's her addressing her addictions and trying to get over them. And I just heard this song and I knew the writer from years back, who's a musical theater and pop writer. He's written a lot of Tate McRae songs. And so I've always been a fan. And I called him. I said, please, God, tell me that this is part of a musical and not just a hit. So we flew him and his director, Sammy Cannold, out for a whole month to just give birth to as much material as possible. Right. And at the end, they had their whole first act. And so we did that as a concert for the public. And we are about to commission our very first musical as we speak, and about to sign our 2025 show for the year. So every year we try to do one new musical, four master classes, and we do a program called the New York Bridge Program, where we fly out three Ball State students that are seniors mm-hmm. to apprentice or be a part of a workshop of a musical that's Broadway bound. And so we've done that twice now. And we'll probably be doing that this summer. But yeah.
That's incredible. And that is a tremendous amount of work to achieve, even in the midst of the upheaval over the last several years. And, you know, people say, oh, the pandemic's over. And it's not really. I mean, we're still dealing with the after effects of that as an industry, as you well know. So why Indianapolis, Joel? Why do you fly everybody out here?
That's a great question. I do think there's a misunderstanding that, like, because I'm from Indiana, I somehow had relationships with, like, the mayor's office and the top philanthropists and companies. And it's like, I did not at all. I church, library, high school, and home were all on the same block. And I didn't have a big, robust community. Indianapolis just made so much sense. It's the Hoosier hospitality state. It's the crossroads of America. It's the heartland. It's known for all the things that can make how hard making art is more comfortable and more warm and more welcoming. And I do think when you're experiencing a piece of art that really touches you, you're also receiving the way in which it was made. And when things are joyfully made, I think that's the time when you laugh the most in the theater, or you laugh the most at a TV show or a stand-up's joke. I think when things are excruciatingly made, you can feel that. So I love the idea, honestly, of bringing people to my hometown, showing them a slice of my life. And while most of the people who've come out have never been to Indiana, they aren't from New York. So there is this sense that we're all from somewhere and we all go to New York because that's where the theaters are and that's where the jobs are. But for those of us who want to just find the best possible story that means something special to us, the idea of getting reception and getting feedback from the people that are the theater going audience, which is people that are not based in New York. There's a whole beautiful graph that the Broadway League made a couple of years ago where they show that for something like the first 4 to 8 weeks of shows, majority of the audience is in the tri-state area. After that, it's tourists. And if tourists haven't caught on, the show won't survive, particularly if it wants to be a long-running show, particularly a musical. So if the show isn't getting a warm reception in Indianapolis, something's wrong there. And I can't tell you, the cost of musicals is going up. The length of time it takes to make a musical is going up. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing that's causing that is not money. I everything gets more expensive. It's just the way it is. I think it's distraction. I really think it's just that, like, it's so hard for me to be on a Zoom talking about anything without checking my phone 50 times on that Zoom. So getting them to Indianapolis where they don't have those distractions and they can fully immerse themselves in their show and in each other, that's, I think, how you get shows done faster. Now, one other thing I'll say about that is I kind of just described a perfect situation if you're single and young, right?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Right. I actually created a fairly exclusive program where I'm saying, but if you have kids, it's really hard. And if you're in love with somebody and you haven't seen them in a long time, it's really hard. Or if you have a specific 9-to-5 that helps you pay the bills, it's really hard. So what we've really tried to do to make sure that we're not just bringing out a certain age demographic or a certain privilege that someone might have where they can leave their job or they're working virtually. We just made an offer to someone to do a class who, you know, she just had her second child 4 or 5 months ago. And we were like, hey, we'd love for you to come out and teach these kids. We will fly your whole family out. We will build the schedule around the nap schedule, the nursing schedule. will do da, 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 da. And we're just beta testing it in a small circumstance like that, where it's one family.
And you support the whole artist doing it, which I think is important that you recognize that, you know, and I, as somebody who is a writer as well, it's like the retreat concept is wonderful. But again, there are aspects to that do make it difficult as well. One of the things you said, Joel, that I so appreciate is this idea of creating from a place of joy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that when you can find a place that, like Indianapolis, say, that's welcoming and where you can minimize the distractions, because that is indeed a situation that we all face. Yes. As the economy shifts to attention, right? That there's something about creating in the heartland that can bring that out in something, you know. So as you're working on a piece, you want the creators to feel at home and welcome. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. And one of the ways we do that is we say we treat artists the way their fans think they're treated.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things we wanted to do was I would ask, so we'll take Devil Wears Prada as an example. Shana Taub, I know she's been a downtown theater writer forever. She's written some of my favorite shows that haven't been on Broadway. I know she loves doing yoga. So we had an Indiana local company have a yoga mat for her. I asked some of her friends that I'm friends with what kind of rehearsal treats she likes if she has allergies. We do a meal that is just the whole team in a private room at one of the restaurants when they're there. We really try to roll out the red carpet in a way where we're also elevating and showcasing the great things that Indiana has to offer, because most of the people we're bringing out have hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers. So if they take one picture of the Madam Walker, that helps tell the story of Indiana, of our giants, the legacy people.
Yeah.
So we're pretty adamant on, you know, not going to McDonald's when the team's in town. We want them to go to that local restaurant. We want them to try things that are made in the backyards of these people. We like to take them to small businesses if they want to go out. And I've experienced this myself. I don't love traveling the way I used to when I was younger. I get homesick really fast. I'm slightly a little bit more of a homebody. And there are teams that I know before I'm even reaching out saying, we'd love to bring your show, I'm already starting to think, okay, director X doesn't love traveling for whatever reason. How do we make what is underneath that easier? Like, is it the traveling, or is it the fact that living in a hotel does not feel homey? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Can we do a lake house Airbnb where the whole creative team can be together? Everybody needs their own bathroom. Everybody needs XYZ. They want their own space, but can we offer a home away from home because they don't like hotels? So we have had an incredible supporter base where people say, hey, we've got a lake home an hour north of Indianapolis that we don't really use, or hey, we have this penthouse downtown. and that kind of like, that is so Hoosier, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's totally so Hoosier to be like, my home is your home. That's not the way it is in New York. It's like everything in my apartment, there's very few things and they're all valuable to me.
And there's not enough room for a collaborative team to come in, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and I love that about that too, that there's some care taken to create the space where collaboration can happen. And we were talking earlier about all of the demands on our time and attention. And that's the thing, right? Is that musical theater in particular is collaborative. It takes a number of different types of creators to be in the room together. And when there's so much external pressure from the outside in different ways, it's very difficult for that synergy to really take hold.
Absolutely. I do think like as we grow, as we continue to grow, as we continue to offer different things to creative teams, the smartest thing for us to do is show them the kinds of environments they want. The analogy I like to use is when the pandemic happened, all these theater institutions with budgets of 10 million and above were like these huge aircraft carriers. It was really hard to turn the ship. And turning the ship took a lot of energy and a lot of resource. We are like a speedboat. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to be like, oh, you only have one song written. I'm going to play that song for my board members. We're all going to cry and be like, whatever the rest of this show is going to be, we have to find out. So let's send Sammy and Zach to Indianapolis for a month to write that. That's easier than a whole organization that says, this is just what we do. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we grew 70% last year. We've been very fortunate to grow year over year. And part of that is, what does an infant child do but eat and grow, right? but the other part of that is because we've shown teams that need something totally different, like an orchestration lab, we said, great, tell us more about what that would be. Let's see if we can meet in the middle or what we can actually do to resource you. And if you're able to do that, then that creative team goes back to New York and is like, you're not going to believe the time I just had, rather than them saying, hey, we're the O'Neill Center. This is what we do. We can't really pay for X. We can't really do that. We don't have much money for actors. We approach it totally different and learn what the show needs for as long as we can before kind of submitting, hey, here's a proposal that would excite the community, the community's companies, the families here, the kids here. Does this excite your team?
And development is never a one-size-fits-all proposition. So it's interesting that I like the analogy of a speedboat, because if you spend time getting to know the artists and asking them what they need and then doing what you can to provide it, that feels like real support.
Absolutely. And I also think I like to use that analogy because I think people are being hard on big institutions right now, particularly in the American theater, in a way where it's like they're all changing so faster mm-hmm. than their staff can even learn the changes that need to happen. Let's not even talk about the problem of exclusion and equity, because that's its own thing. Let's just talk about AI. How are staff that are using like the oldest technology in the world trying to keep up with all the new AI tools that are out there, let alone the relationships they need to have with artists? So I'm kind of able to fly under the radar a little bit in an easy way, where we can meet shows and creative teams where they are, because I don't have a massive staff to answer to in the same way. We are a small team that are on the same page because we're a small team.
Yeah. Joel, I could keep talking. I have to go, unfortunately, and go be a professor here in a few minutes. But this has been
great. Lucky for them. I want to end with this because I fell in love with making musicals through a number of pathways. But one of the many experiences that solidified that for me was my sophomore year at the Virginia B. Ball Center, where for a whole semester, me and a team of classmates in a mansion off campus got to make a musical together with a very strict time limit. And you taught and led and directed that whole initiative. And if I hadn't had that experience, one, I don't know if I would have known how fun making a musical could be. I don't think I would have appreciated how hard it is, which definitely helped me create what is Discovering Broadway. It's all a cycle, and it's why we do classes, is because
totally.
Have a career, we can point towards the teachers that were like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this because this person gave me a space to be an artist. So thank you.
Oh my God, Joel, you're making me cry.
Good.
I appreciate you giving us some time today, and take care and all the very best.
You as well. We'll talk soon. Right.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Joel Kirk is the CEO and founder of Discovering Broadway. We reached him in New York. It's time, once again, to ask another artist, what are you working on? And today we have two very special guests in this studio with us. We have an artist who is working on a special project. Welcome, Rose Elliott. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Rose?
I'm in seventh grade, and
where do you go to school?
Burris.
You go to Burris, or you're a seventh grader at Burris Laboratory School. Mm-hmm. And what is your favorite subject at school?
That's a hard one. Probably science.
Okay, great. And I know that you're a musician as well.
Yes.
What do you play?
I play the violin and the clarinet.
That's wonderful. But that is not the art that we're here to talk about, are we?
No.
No. All right. Rose has been working on a special project that we wanted her to share with our listeners, and it involves sewing. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you are a fiber artist working with some special kinds of fabrics. Can you talk a little bit about some of your more recent projects?
Yeah. So the project I worked on was we made a pillow out of my dad's shirts. He recently passed July 18th, 2024. Mm-hmm. And we thought, I mean, he has a lot of shirts, so we wanted to kind of incorporate that and just have it around the house for hugs. And so we turned his shirts into a pillow.
That's awesome. So I'm actually looking at one of those pillows right now, and I was friends with your father, and I miss him every day, as I know you do as well. And it's such a lovely piece. And it kind of, I mean, the shirt, you can kind of sort of see the collar here, and it looks like a shirt. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's even got a special pocket, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what were you talking about putting into the pocket?
So my dad would write letters, and I just have a lot of things from him that there's a little pocket at the top that I was thinking of putting those in to keep them safe.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. We also have another guest in studio today. It's Rose's mom, Kate. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Jen. Thank you for having us.
Of course. Could you talk a little bit about the origins of this project? How did this begin?
So as Rose said, Michael had tons of button-down shirts, and I've not done anything with any of the clothes in his closet. For some reason, his clothes are particularly difficult for me to look at. And mm-hmm. so I think of ever getting rid of. And yeah. So as I was kind of poking around on the internet, and I saw these memory pillows, and some reason it's, you know, you can order them and they have, you know, sayings and poems stitched mm-hmm. on them. But I thought that it would be a really great project for Rose and my son, William, to do with our dear friend, Karma Shager, who worked she's an amazing seamstress, and she and her husband both worked with Michael in various capacities in the Department of Theater and Dance here at Ball State. And the kids had been going to sew with her and learn how to sew for the past about 7 years, I think, now that I calculate the years, just because I had wonderful memories sewing with my grandmother mm-hmm. and I wanted my kids to have that.
So do I. I had those as well.
Right. Yeah. And we don't have family in town. Our grandparents aren't in town. And so I just wanted them to have that opportunity to make those multi-generational bonds. And Karma's mm-hmm. been amazing. They've sewn ornaments and tooth fairy pillows and PJ pants and things like that. So Karma, I sent her the idea, and they had a wonderful time over Christmas making a pillow for Michael's sister and mm-hmm. mother. And now they each picked out a shirt and are working on the pillows for themselves to keep.
Right. And so many things here that are so interesting is we were talking before we began recording about how you don't really know anybody who sews. Is that right, Rose?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, fiber arts are a long-standing and traditional art form, right? And there's something really wonderful about keeping that alive, don't you think?
Yes. It's very important to, like, keep it alive and just keep, it's very fun to sew.
Yeah, it is. What's fun about it? What do you like doing?
It's peaceful, I guess, in the sense. And it's just, I don't know, you can talk while doing it. It's nothing you have to focus on too much. And it's really comforting.
You said something earlier, too, that was a surprise for you, that when you sew, things are made inside out.
Oh, yeah. So when you make pillows, I didn't know this, but you sew inside so you don't, like, show the seams or, like, you can't ruin the pillow once it's sewed and you can't destroy it. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. I loved talking with especially, you know, students and folks your age who are kind of discovering, I guess tactile is the right way to put it, like tactile, like fiber arts or analog art forms, like people collecting records now, which, you know, we've been digital for so long. And I think that's just really pretty wonderful. And it's also a way to I guess, work with an emotional thing, right?
Yeah.
Is it helping you think when you think about your dad?
I guess nothing can really help necessarily, but I mean, it is kind of nice having a piece of him.
Absolutely. It's wonderful how we can make things as, you know, human people who are dealing with emotions, whether they're joyful or not, right? Mm-hmm. And how making things can help us through those times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do
you want to keep working on your sewing projects? What do you think?
Yes, I enjoy it a lot. It's really fun.
Amazing. And you said this, Rose, that it's peaceful, I think is the word you used, and it gives you time to just kind of be and do a task that is also making something, right? So even though it may be a little repetitive to sew, at the end of it, you have this lovely thing that you've made.
Yes.
It is. That is an interesting, I would love to ask you that question. Like, when you're sewing with Karma, like, there's not, she might have a little music on or something like that, but you don't, you know, you don't have your phone with you. You have to be precise. Well, I mean, yeah.
It's
in the room. You can see it. But, you know, you have to be precise. You have to be patient. You have to, you know, what is the benefit of that? And do you appreciate that kind of pause and silence?
I mean, I'm not a very patient person, in my opinion. So I think it's nice to slow down at times. And I think, yeah, it's just kind of like, we talk sometimes, but it's just kind of nice. It's like not awkward silence. It's just like we're working.
And it's nice to just be together with somebody, right? With no expectations, just being and connecting and being in the room together.
Yeah.
I think that this is, I love that we can share this with our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you've inspired a lot of people today, Rose.
Thank you.
Rose and Kate Elliott were gracious enough to come by our studios today and share with Pop of Culture listeners what they are working on. So I've been doing this episode by myself and I'm lonely. So we have a special guest for today's arts calendar. Well, not really a special guest. You're always here, Luke. Hi,
I'm
Luke.
Always lurking in the background, checking your audio levels.
I know. So Luke is with us today for our arts calendar, and we're going to kick it off with astronauts going to and from the International Space Station. Mm. This week, it's the perfect time to catch Astronaut at the Charles W. Brown Planetarium. You'll experience a rocket launch from inside the body of an astronaut, explore the amazing worlds of space, and discover the perils that lurk beyond our earthly bonds. Take a ride February 21st and Saturday, March 22nd at 5 p.m.
There are other shows at the Charles W. Brown Planetarium this weekend as well. All shows are open to the public, and all showtimes can be found at bsu.edu/planetarium.
I don't think I'll ever get used to the fact that there's people living and working in space.
I know. Thanks. Experience the launch from inside the body?
That's how intriguing it is. Right.
Yes, let's do it.
All right, the East Central Indiana Chamber Orchestra clocks in for the spring concert, The Movement of Time.
I see what you did there.
The ECICO will tick through time-honored composers like Leroy Anderson, Aaron Copland, and The Beatles. The concert is open to the public, but check your watches. Show time is Saturday, March 22nd at 7 p.m. at Muncie Central High School Auditorium.
Time doesn't exist, you know. Yeah. We could talk about that for a long time.
No, I think my boss is well aware that I feel that way.
That segues nicely into another kind of orchestra, jazz orchestra. Joy Swing Jazz Orchestra features 18 instrumentalists and vocalists to create a big band experience in the modern day. They'll be at the Jazz Kitchen in Broad Ripple this Tuesday, March 25th. The show starts at 7 p.m., and tickets are at thejazzkitchen.com.
It's Youth Arts Month at the Honeywell Center in Wabash, and this Saturday, March 22nd, is Youth Arts Activity Day. There are performances, make it and take it projects, and workshops to create mini mosaics or watercolor castles. Some events require registration. You can learn more at honeywellarts.org/YAM, or you can call them 260-563-1102.
Keeping with the family theme, Wednesday, March 26th is Family Adventure Day at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Their spring celebration has events throughout the day from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There are staggered start times, but come and go with your family as you please. More at minnetrista.net.
Climb aboard a new exhibit at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center. The Electric Railway, Indiana's Interurbans, celebrates and showcases the history and importance of interurban railways in Indiana. You can even step into a recreated interurban car and experience what it was like to be whisked along the over 1,800 miles of interurban rail lines in Indiana. Second, I learned, only to Ohio in the entire United States.
How about that?
Right?
Yeah.
Tickets and all the particulars are at indianahistory.org.
Considering a career in the arts? Well, this Wednesday, March 26th, on the second floor of Ball State's Arts and Journalism Building, grab a seat at Praxis, Parallel Approaches to a Career in the Arts. Artist, educator, administrator, and curator Michael Endo will discuss the multiple and diverse practices and skills that are often necessary to create a stable career in the arts. There's parking right outside the building, and all info is at bsu.edu/CFA.
Tell us about your arts and culture event by submitting to the show. No, seriously.
Do it.
Head to indianapublicradio.org/contact and select Pop of Culture. And while you're there, if you need even more things to do, check out our new events calendar. Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our art director is Tracy Lauk, and our producer is Luke Jones, who saw snow in the forecast and immediately submitted for some paid time off. Our show is hosted by me, Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University. We'll